Hey everybody, welcome back to Lynchcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm not your only host, but I am a host, Tyler.
We're not starting over again, we're leaving that.
As we should.
We joked the first time we did that, that he remembered his name. This time, he forgot his name. Like, it's okay, I forgot that we're doing it that way, and he forgot his name. That's how this episode's going to go. We have absolutely no hope for us to actually have a coherent episode. So the question...
Be surprised when it's 45 minutes in and we're just getting to the main topic. We warned you.
More likely 45 minutes in, we still haven't done the contact information yet because we're still bullshitting about suckless software. Okay, so Tyler, what have you done this week in Linux?
Oh, as busy as it's been, not too much. However, I have decided that I'm going to spend a full week just using suckless software again. I've done this in the past, but I'm hoping that Surf, the one weak link of all suckless software, which, by the way, if that upsets you, I'm sorry.
No, Surf is terrible.
The truth must just hurt. Surf is the weak link of all suckless software, and hopefully there's been some minor improvements that make it at least usable. Yeah, I don't figure so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that and see how it is on my hallway laptop that I'm using, because it's low power as hell, and I can charge it with a USB-C cord, which is nice. But yeah, that's what I'm up to. What you up to?
Surf, before we move on to me, Surf is just so slow. I mean, it's just so slow. I mean, it's like noticeably slow. Like, it's not like every once, like Firefox compared to like Chromium, and sometimes is sometimes slower, but you can notice that Surf is slow. Like, it's sometimes just like,
Sometimes it genuinely surprises you how slow it is.
Yeah, it's really. And the thing is, they shouldn't make a browser. Okay, I'm just gonna put this right out there. They shouldn't make one because they don't update their software often enough to be good at doing a browser. Browsers need constant iteration and updates and stuff like that.
And here's the thing: their core philosophy does not align with the internet in general.
Now, if they made like a Gemini browser, that would make sense.
That would make total sense. But there were like, even just making a web browser in the first, like, you can't be suckless and make a browser for the web that people are going to actually use. Your core values don't even align with the internet. What are you doing?
Because your suckless philosophy comes straight up against the wall that is JavaScript. You know? Seriously, it just doesn't... The thing is Qt Browser does it well because it actually, you know, works and it's fast and runs on modern technologies and it's constantly updated. Like every time I do an Arch update, there's an update for Qt Browser, it feels like, you know, and that's just like one guy. Like, Qt Browser is like one dude. I'm sure there's a community that's supporting it, but like it's ran by like one dude. So I mean,
Well, see, like, the thing that I the reason I can understand and appreciate Chromium more is only because, Qt Browser, is because it is the Chromium web engine stripped down, and then all of that plug-in UI, all of that, well, UI in general, it's just cleaned and scraped out of there, and you get this nice keyboard-driven environment. And it's got to be easier to maintain than something like a suckless where you're, yeah, I mean, you're using a web engine, but you're also, like, I genuinely don't know what makes suckless so slow. I will never understand it.
Well, because they have no interest in doing anything to speed it up. If they went through and did any tweaking of it to speed it up, then it wouldn't be suckless anymore. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why. I mean, like I said before, they should just not make a browser. It just shouldn't exist. I mean, I understand why they want to have that kind of whole suite of software that goes by their philosophy, but that's the one thing you just really can't do in a suckless way. You can't. Plus, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Like I said, it's just not updated often enough to keep up with the way the internet changes. you know? Mm-hmm. All right. So I have two things to talk about this week. And I'm going to make a video about the first one. I've been using GNOME now for 5 days, I think.
Uh-huh. And you have loved every second of it. It's been the best time of your life.
Yes. Uh-huh. No, it hasn't. It has not been as bad as I thought it was going to be. So I will say that.
Okay.
It is usable. I have used it the whole time without any extensions. Zero. The only thing I've done is download Tweak Tools so I could change the theme. Because I was not using Adawaita. I was just not going to do that. I would literally die before I ever used that theme. So I have download tweaks and changed the themes. And it's fine. That's all I've done. And then I've gone through and just made it keyboard driven. I mean, that's the way they want you to use GNOME is through your keyboard. So I've done that. I'm used to using the keyboard to do a window manager, so it makes sense to me. Some of the default key bindings are just the dumbest, most dumb thing ever. But once I've changed them, it's fine. I have had some instances where it freezes for whatever reason. Like yesterday, I hit the super key in order to get the multitasking view, and it froze there. I had to actually literally restart my computer. It was like I was on Windows Vista again, and I had to hit Control-Alt-Delete. You know, I literally had to go into a TTY and reboot my computer in order for it to come back. And I don't understand. I don't know whether that's an Arch problem or if that's a GNOME problem. That was a pain in the ass. I also still have not managed to get it so that the screen will go to sleep after a certain amount of inactivity. I've not been able to do it. I've looked on the internet every single day since I've started. There's somebody told me to download GNOME Screensaver, which is abandoned, but apparently used to work. That didn't work. The replacement for that was X Screensaver. I downloaded that and made sure that was running. That didn't work. Somebody told me that I just had to lock the screen. So there's a key binding to lock the screen. And so I locked the screen, and all that managed to do was bring up the lock screen for the whole time I was away from my computer. The screen's never turned off. So I've tried 5 or 6 different things. There was a solution to change like a config file for GTK or something in order to get it done. I tried that. That didn't work. So this whole experience of me trying to get the screens just to turn off, because you know, I when I get up and go use the standing desk that I get made fun of, you know, I actually have to get up and go over there and use the standing desk. You know, I want these monitors to turn off after like 10 minutes or something. Like whatever, it doesn't matter, but it won't work. So the screens stay on, and I don't like that. I like conserving at least a little bit of electricity. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a tiny bit.
You know, I do my part, but it's just so I have had that problem before in the past when I used GTK based or GNOME based like desktop environments. Like when I used Budgie for a while, that had the same problem on Arch, because there's some dependency there that's just I'm missing. Like it's some dependency that handles that functionality. The problem is there's no documentation for that functionality at all, so I have no clue what dependency I'm missing and why it's not bundled with GNOME on Arch in the first place. Whatever that dependency is, I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me, and it pisses me off a lot. So that has been a problem with GNOME. I also have just found it boring. Like, I can understand now more why people use it, because there's nothing to do in it other than do your work. You get in there and you do your work. You don't go through and, you know, mess around with Windows and stuff like that. It's just you do your work, and it's fine. You know, it's not interesting to me whatsoever. You know, I have no interest in changing the color scheme again. Like, it's fine. You know?
It's GNOME. GNOME don't really change that much.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't know. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. It's weird being in a floating window manager again. Like, I can go through and take the window and swirl it around and around and around and around like a fidget spinner, you know?
So what I'm hearing is you now love GNOME, yes?
I can't wait to go back to a tiling window manager. I'm gonna
sounds like love to me.
I'm gonna spend the next 2 days in it. So I got Friday and Saturday left. I'm gonna make my video on Saturday. And today I'm gonna go through and install some extensions. The last 2 or 3 days I'm gonna use with some extensions, even though it's outside of the purview of what the GNOME developers want. And I'm gonna install the tiling extension so I can have like a tiling window manager effect. I'm gonna change it so that the dock is available all the time and stuff. Like, I'm gonna just do as much tweaking as I want for the next thing and see if that makes GNOME more interesting to me. Because right now it's boring, you know. Like even with like XFCE or Cinnamon or obviously Plasma, you know, there's tons of stuff you can do to tweak it and play around with it. And I guess it goes towards my mentality of always wanting to tweak and mess around with my desktop environment. Maybe there is something to the GNOME madness of not doing that, because really all you can do in GNOME is your work. You can't go through and do anything else.
Yeah. I think that is what it's made for. It is made so that you get your work done. And then, like, our arguments about it being uncustomizable is sort of like, I feel like that's what the devs use right back at us. They're like, yeah, it's not meant for that. It's not meant for customizing. It's not meant for all that stuff. It's just meant for you to hop in and you get your work done. And it generally makes sense. And also has big flashy buttons. So, yay.
So, once we get to the news item, we'll talk a little bit more about, all right, so the second thing I want to talk about in this section is that I'm having some Linux problems. So, I've talked about this before, but my keyboard just periodically stops working. And I have to unplug the keyboard and plug it back in order to get to work. Now, I thought that it was the keyboard itself. So I took this $180 keyboard away and got I don't know what the hell that keyboard is. I don't remember. But anyways, the keyboard that normally sits on that desk, and swapped them around. Because I thought it was the keyboard. So I used that for a few days, and the same thing happens. So it's not the keyboard. It's not the cord, because it was a completely different cord. So the only other two options are it's the operating system, which is Arco, or it's the computer itself. So in hope that it's not a hardware problem, because if it is, I'm screwed. Because you can't buy shit anymore. Unless you have like $1 million. I've started to think about hopping away from Arco, despite the fact that everything else on the system works fantastically. I don't want to hop so bad. And I've been dragging my feet, because I talked about it 2 days ago. I was going to do it 2 days ago, but I just so don't want to do it, because everything else works so good. I'm in the process of thinking about distro hopping again. I'm not sure where I would go. I know where, like, Joshua Lee and F Society and all those guys would want me to go. I guess it's not going to be Gentoo. I'm just sorry, it's not going to be Gentoo. So it's going to be... I just don't know what distro I'm going to end up landing on yet.
Well, don't worry. It's a long road to heaven, man. And when you end up in Gentoo, heaven. love the talk, man.
The thing is, somebody asked me, I think it was Joshua on Patreon, asked me what the big deal about the AUR is and why Arch users hate leaving the AUR behind. And the thing is I've never gone into an Arch-based system and not been able to go through and download a piece of software that I wanted. As long as the AUR is enabled, I can find any piece of software. I've never found a single piece of software ever that wasn't in the AUR.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. If you come across something random on the internet and you want it, don't spend your time compiling it from source, because that's a waste of time. It's definitely in the AUR. Pull it down from the AUR.
Well, like the other day, I was working on a video about the top five, or five alternatives to NeoFetch. And I found some, random shit. Just a random person made a fetch application, posted it on Reddit. That was in the AUR, okay? It was. So, the reason why I don't want to leave the AUR behind is because of that experience. You don't have that experience anywhere else. The only place that I've come close to finding that is on OpenSUSE. OpenSUSE has a huge repository. I don't know if, I mean, and it's not close to the AUR, but it's good. The problem with OpenSUSE is that Zipper is the slowest package manager you've ever seen in your life. It is so slow. It's like it's like surf level slow. You know, it's just it's really slow. I've really enjoyed my time with OpenSUSE. I've considered making that my actual daily driver. I've considered it, but that Zipper is just so slow. Yast is awesome. Yast is so good. But again, it's slow. Like you can tell it was designed in another era because it's very clunky too. But so I don't know where I'm going to end up. It's probably going to be on like Garuda or Endeavor OS, just because I want to try to see if a different OS, but still Arch based, has the same problems with the keyboard. And if that doesn't work, then I'll probably go to like something like MX or maybe like Gecko Linux or Sparky or something different.
Wait, have you tried just changing up the kernel?
I'm not on an LTS kernel. I'm on the latest kernel.
You might want to just try, just for the sake of argument, just try the Xen kernel. Since it's aimed more at desktops, it might have better support for your different desktop devices.
I could give it a try. The thing is that this problem has been happening over multiple kernels. So it's like it's been going on for a while. So it's been going on throughout 5.13 and all 5.14. So I don't know. Like I said, I could give it a try. It's not going to hurt anything, especially if I'm going to hop anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Hmm. Yeah. That's going to be a project for this weekend. I'll update everybody next week on where I end up. It'll probably, knowing me, be right back on Arco. That's probably.
Wouldn't be surprised.
like we've done it. We've played this game before. All right. I don't know what it is about this podcast, but every time we start, my nose starts itching.
Uh-huh.
It's the dumbest thing. All right. Anyway, so on that note, let's go ahead and move to the contact information. We're only 22 minutes in, so we're only halfway towards the 40 minutes that we predicted. You can get in contact with us if you'd like to do so at Twitter. You can do it at Twitter, on Twitter, at the Linux Cast on Twitter. You can subscribe to all of our audio feeds and all that stuff at thelinuxcast.org. That will just transfer you to our anchor.fm page, where you can literally subscribe to the podcast on basically any podcatcher that you could possibly imagine. There's like 10 of them that we're officially on, and there's also like an RSS feed there in case you want to do it the old-fashioned way. You could do it that way. You can contact us via email at thelinuxcast.org. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/linuxcast. Thanks everybody who does so. I will thank you by name at the end. You can follow Tyler, who goes by Zany on the internet, on Odyssey and YouTube and on Discord. His YouTube channel is like... Did you pass 850 this week? Did I see that?
Yep.
So he's past 850. So he's like this close to 1,000. He so close to 1,000. We're gonna get him there by the end of the year, or literally die trying. and he's promised us all turkey, by the way, if he gets to 1,000 subscribers, because he's got like 3 turkeys. He's got plenty enough for everybody.
Exactly. 3 wild turkeys. Come on now, and they're getting fatter every day.
Maybe because they're starving the chickens.
I would not be surprised.
Anyways, you can also subscribe to the Linux Cast on YouTube at YouTube.com/LinuxCast. Just to, you know, on a similar note, we're this close to 5,000 subscribers. Like, we're at 4.84 right now as we speak. So,
And we're going to get there by the end of the year or die trying.
I hate taking stuff for granted and just assuming that the growth is going to continue the way it has. But if the growth does continue the way it has, should see 5,000 in the next 2 weeks.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right.
I will do a special stream or something to commemorate 5,000, but we'll see. The original plan for 5,000 subscribers was to do the first live Linux cast, but we've already done that. Like, we've done that. We've done a couple. Now, On that subject, we are going to live stream every other Linux cast. So we won't be doing next week. We'll do the week after, at least for now. Eventually, probably we'll do all of them. Right now, we're just doing every other one. The way it's going to work is if you're in the live, like the live chat, you'll have access to this episode and the way we record it. You'll get the pre-show, you'll get the post-show, and all that stuff. The video is not going to get deleted, but immediately after we stop recording, the video will go from public to unlisted. Okay, and the reason why I'm doing that is because I want most of the views to go to the edited one, which will appear on Friday. It's when we did the whole split thing where I left both of them up, it split the views. We got the same amount of views total if I combined them. It just messed with my OCD, the fact that we split them. So I'm... Don't mind me, I'm crazy town. It's just gonna... We're gonna try it this way. There's a good chance later on I'll change it again because that's what I do. But for now, what I probably will do is put a link to the unlisted video in the show notes. So if you want to go back and watch the chat, you can. For the most part, all we do during the pre-show is bullshit about chickens and donkeys. And although I don't think we talked about donkeys. We talked about sheep and we talked about chickens and turkeys and wagons. Yeah, that's basically what we talked about during the pre-show. So you don't miss much. you don't miss much. Anyways, so that's what's happening with that. Subject to change because I'm experimenting. That's the reason why we're only doing it every other one. Anyways, okay. Gen 2 or 9 front for the 5K special, says F Society. No. No.
With the right amount of donations on Patreon, it could be a Gen 2.
I was going to say, we know when Gen 2 will happen. Okay, so anyways, that is contact information. Now, every single week, Tyler and I scour the internet for amazing Linux news links, and we come up with one each. And this week, we actually managed to find two links that were actually news, which is better than
the last. Impressive.
Like, usually one or the other of us choose something different, but this week they're actually news. So, Tyler, what news item did you choose this week?
A glorious little article on Valve's new stable Steam client update that has now brought some improved features for us, including... PipeWire can now do desktop capture from PipeWire. All you have to do is use the -PipeWire command line option when you launch the Steam client, which is awesome. And another one that I think is really good, since our main topic is pretty much about slower internet speeds and being stuff being at best or worst for that. It also reduces the size of the Vulkan pre-caching stuff for that you've got to download when you're going to play a game using Proton. So that's really awesome. And for those of you who like are limited or capped data from your provider, amazing. Because we all know just how big some freaking games are. Call of Duty, just expecting you to have an extra 160 gigs for it, just because you rich like that. So every little bit they can scrape off of the extra bits and pieces that you have to download to be able to play stuff like that. Awesome.
Yeah, that is cool. I wonder... Well, do you? They have a a memory card. Good Lord, Matt, names hard words. they have a memory card slot on the Steam Deck. So, do you think there'd be like a service from somebody? Probably not Valve itself, but that like sells like memory like game cartridges for the Steam Deck. That'd be actually kind of really cool. Like, even if it was like just like retro games or something like that, like I mean most people will just download that stuff, but it'd be kind of actually cool for people who, you know, couldn't have access to the internet to be able to go out and just say, you know what, I bought a few game cartridges with Mario on it or something. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, see, the problem with that, though, is it's because it's going to be on a – it's essentially just a micro SD card card slot. I don't think many game publishers are going to be interested in making their games for on that format.
Yeah, it's not going to be the big ones. I'm talking about more like small, like Linux-y developers. You know?
Maybe. I just don't know, though, because if you've already got a big micro SD card slot in there, or already a big micro SD in there, why not just download your small indie game to the SD card that you've already got? But then also, when it comes to distributing like retro games and stuff, I mean, already how you're acquiring those games is not technically the most legal route ever if you're downloading the ROM. So
Yeah, I don't know. It was just thought.
But it is a cool idea. People definitely could do the whole, you know, behind closed doors, like, hey, here's a game cartridge with like all of the NES games on it.
Well, see, I missed the days of actually having game cartridges. Like, it's just like, you remember, you go, because there was something special about going to the local electronics store and buying the Mario Kart game, or getting Mario 64 in a cartridge for Christmas. You know, like, you actually got something. Like, nowadays, if your parents give you like a video game for Christmas, what they're actually doing is handing you like a Steam redemption code. Like, ooh, yeah. This is really fun to unwrap, you know? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old. You know, it's like that it's a lot harder.
Digital games are completely taking away the fun aspect of getting a game, you know, like unwrapping it and then having it to like hold on to for a long time.
Yeah, like, so I remember vividly the Nintendo 64, getting that for Christmas from my mom and dad, and I remember how just totally excited I was to get it, because it was my first brand new console. Every console I had before that had come from like a garage sale. Like, we never bought a brand new one before that one, and it was just, I mean, it was such a special memory that I have in my head. Like, nowadays, I mean, first of all, I don't console game anymore, but also they're games, I mean, like $80 a game is just way too expensive for me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just dumb. All right.
Or if you want to get the premium edition, just spend $130. Well,
you pay $80 for the game, and then you don't get the whole game. If you want more, you have to get the DLC, which costs even more money. This is why I'm not a gamer. I mean, it's one of the reasons. The other reason is I'm terrible at games. But I've been playing. So this is dumb. I got on my phone. I've been playing a game called, let me look at this. It's called Apple Knight, and it is like a 2D scroller type thing. It's really, really fun. There's another one called Dan the Man, which is also similar, and that one is less Mario and more I don't really know how to explain it other than he beats the crap out of people in 2D. It's kind of fun. It's really fun. So mobile games have turned my thing. Anyways,
You said mobile games. Guess what game I downloaded?
Clash of Clans? Did you download Clash of Clans?
Yeah.
I should download it. We should create our own clan. I don't actually have it downloaded anymore. I had it on my old phone, but when I switched to my new phone, I didn't re-download it because
unacceptable. That was one of the core reasons that you said you couldn't get a Linux phone. You have to at least keep it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the problem is I was so reluctant to join into a clan again because when you join into a clan, you have to have – there's a responsibility to be there and participate and do wars and stuff like that, because they have – like every 2 days you have a war, like a clan war where clans compete against each other. And if you get put into a war, you have to be there. And if you don't, your whole clan suffers because everyone has to do their two battles, right? So I didn't want that responsibility again. It was too much of a time thing, because also at the beginning of the month they have something called clan war leagues, where a whole bunch of clans are put into a league and they compete against other leagues, and that takes place for the first 7 days of the month, and you have just one battle each day, but it's still something that you have to remember to do, and it just was something that I wasn't, you know.
I know. I mean, being a clan leader is tough work. I totally understand
it. It definitely is. So maybe I will have to download it again, and we'll have to play that. That'd be fun. All right. Anyways, wow, that was. It was still gaming, so it was on topic. Okay. All right. My topic for the week is more GNOME stuff. I've had GNOME on the mind because I've been using GNOME, so I've been paying attention.
You love GNOME. You keep going. You didn't hear me. I killed him.
Dead. All right. All right, so GNOME 42, which will be the next release of GNOME, is finally going to have a GNARK mode. They need to call it that. This is not KDE where you got to put a K in front of everything, okay, man? It's all right. they're going to finally have a dark mode preference, and they're doing it in a weird way. It's not going to be changing themes. So, like, normally when you want to change a theme in GNOME, you change to a dark theme. You change to Adawate Dark or whatever it is. They're doing something a little bit different. I didn't really understand it. And leave it to GNOME to do things the hardest way possible. I mean, literally, you have a dark theme. Like, Adawate has a dark theme. Just swap that thing over. And literally, I don't understand. Like, this is a color code situation where it's just literally changing color codes for the widgets or whatever. I mean, I'm not a developer, so I'm assuming there has to be more to it than that. There has to be something that has stopped them from doing that from, you know, the beginning.
Hold up. No, I'm going to go ahead and stop you there. I won't let any developer convince me that changing hex codes is that difficult. Well, nah.
I mean,
if you can already display all of this information and everything, you can go and change the hex codes for it. Like, don't try and convince – there might be a lot of different hex codes to change. I'll agree with you there. It's time consuming, but it's not difficult.
I mean, even if they don't – like, but the thing is that GTK is coded in, I mean, it's coded in C, right? Let's assume that it's coded in C. It's not Python. It's not assembly language. I mean, C and C++, and I think C, all the other C variants, all recognize hex code for colors. I'm not a developer, so I could be completely 100% wrong. But for sure C++ does. So because we know that from DWM, it does support hex codes. So I mean the changing colors. Now there has to, like, maybe the assets themselves would have to be changed, but it doesn't. Maybe that's not how they defined the colors. Maybe they didn't define the colors as hex codes.
I mean, even then, again, you're just changing the color code. Like,
well, I mean, if it is the assets themselves that are the colors, and it's not defined by color codes, but instead, like, you know, like the button itself is like an actual image. Like, it's like a PNG file or something. Like, first of all, if that's the way you're doing this, what is this, the 1990s?
We have so many more problems if that's the case.
There has to be something. There has to be something other than there's stupid, path, you know, that they've set themselves on. There has to be something that has prevented them from doing this before. I don't know what it is, but at least it is happening. So there will be a dark mode in GNOME 42. Whether or not it'll be a good dark mode, we are going to have to wait to see. The thing is I think that they will end up getting way too much credit for this. Okay? So, like, Elementary OS 6, for all intents and purposes, was a complete step back from Elementary OS 5. Like, in terms of functionality and software availability and stuff like that. Now, they did have some cool accessibility features that are good and they spent some time on. But the vast majority of their work for Elementary OS 6 was spent with two things. Dark mode and instituting flat packs, which actually made Elementary OS 6 worse. Okay?
Yep.
But it got good reviews because the dark theme was so good. right? It made it look very pretty. And I think that the same thing is going to happen with Gundam, that they'll get a lot of credit for having a dark mode, even though they're years late, even though it was literally not the hardest thing ever. But I think they'll get so much more credit for doing this and being community forward. Oh, look at this. We're listening to the community. They wanted a dark theme. Here you go. And that's totally not like this one thing does not wash away the rest of the stinkiness that is on GNOME because of their lack of interest in allowing people to customize. If they truly wanted people to, I mean, this is like the fourth week in a row we've talked about this, so we don't really need to belabor the point, but seriously, just allow people to install extensions from the App Store. Like, no more. That's literally all you have to do. Like, all you have to do, make extensions first-class citizens, and we're good. Like, I don't even care about the themes. Like, you're going to have a dark theme, dark and light theme. That's all you need. I can understand not wanting a third part to mess around with third party, you know, themes or whatever. Fine. Whatever. I don't care. I would like it, but leave that to the hacking community. But the extensions are supposed to be part of your, you know, your system, and you have to go to a web browser, install a web extension in order to install them. It's the dumbest
thing. One thing I am interested, though, is I wonder if after GNOME gets its own baked-in dark mode, if we'll start seeing people commenting more on wanting a change in the look of a Dueta, just because of how, like, contrasted with black behind it. I have a feeling that you'll notice just how much, like, well, poo-poo looks.
They have to, Tyler. They have to change that icon theme. Like, that would look absolutely like garbage with a dark theme. Literally.
Well, I mean, I think it looks garbage with a white theme.
But it's going to look way worse with a dark theme. The thing is, I don't think that they're going to change it. I have seen nothing of them saying that they're going to change the icon. And honestly, the thing is the chrome around the windows of Adaweta isn't the worst part of Adaweta. It's always been that icon theme that is just the worst part. So bad. I don't know what designer out there thought that this was a good idea, but those icons are atrocious, and they need to take their design card away from that person. Like, that person should not be allowed to design things for, like, 90 days and have to go back to, like, design stuff.
They should get, like, a YouTube, like, ban, like, for a little bit. Like, you got a strike, boy. You just need to calm down.
You need to go to, like, Envato Elements or, like, one of those TouchPlus.com or something, and have yourself a tutorial in GIMP or Inkscape or something in good design, because that is, I mean, obviously design is very subjective, but I only know a few people that like that icon theme, and those people are all weird. No offense, I love you all dearly, okay? but that icon theme is bad. All right, anyways, so that is the news, and we're only 43 minutes into the show.
Epic.
That's actually early for us. So let's move on to the main topic. The main topic this week was Tyler. So Tyler, tell us what we're going to be talking about for the main topic this week.
Is Linux better than Mac OS or Windows for very slow dial-up-ish speeds? Which one would you... All right, so let's say I throw you into the edge of the desert, just on the edge of society, where you might still have some internet, but it's real poo-poo. It's real bad. Which operating system, not out of preference, would you rather be stuck with?
Okay, so I would answer Linux, but I don't think that the operating system at that point is going to have very much impact on your speeds at all. And the reason
I'm not talking about speeds, but you have to think about using it. So I guess here's a better question. Which one out of those operating systems would you rather get an update for?
Okay, you're going to have to say it again. You cut out there midway the sentence.
Which one of those operating systems would you rather get an update for?
Well, that's easy. I would rather have something like Ubuntu or Debian Linux, because you're only going to get updates every once in a while for them. And if you don't update, on those, you're not going to break your system when you do update. So definitely Linux, because you're not forced to update on Linux. You can go through and just use your computer forever. I mean, even if you chose Arch in that scenario, you can just use your computer forever and ever and not update. Granted, if you tried to update, then you'd probably break stuff. But with Windows, especially Windows, you're forced to update. Like, you have no choice. Unless you buy the enterprise version of Windows, you have to update. You can continue to put it off. I think you can every 7 days. You have to go into the settings and tell it to not, you know, update for 7 days. You have to do that every 7 days. You can do that, but I think they limit you that to 3 tries, and after that, they force you to update. And the thing about Windows Update is it's always in the background, so you don't even know if it's updating. So you can, when you said dial-up, I got a little scared away because I know there are still people who use dial-up. Like, there are a lot of people who still use dial-up, but I think a lot of people are still using, like, DSL. Like, DSL is much more popular, even more than dial-up is. And the thing about DSL is the farther you are away from, like, the node, the slower it is, because it's all, you know, it's based on, you know, like, line of sight or whatever, however it works. But you know, if you're in like a DSL situation, I wouldn't want to run Windows because it's going to force you to update. The difference is, I would say, is that at least with Windows, you're only updating the operating system. With Linux, when you do an update, it updates everything. So it updates your browser, updates every single piece of software you have. So that is going to play into the situation, the scenario a little bit, because you're going to be downloading more, I think, with Linux than you would necessarily with Windows, because you're not updating everything when you update with Windows. Granted, but again, you're not forced to do that.
Mm-hmm. But so out of the trifecta of operating systems here, I think Mac OS gives Linux its actual run for its money, because on Mac OS, even though technically it's going to force you to take updates, but not really. If you tell a Mac not to update, guess what? It listens. That's mind-blowing. I know, Microsoft, you could really learn something there. It listens to the user. But when you do an update, you're not going to be updating all of the, well, you're going to get the updates to the Apple software that comes with your PC, but you're not going to be updating, you know, the Chrome that you've got installed, Firefox, whatever you're using. So it most likely is going to be smaller, but also at the same time, Mac does have the thing of where it, when you do an update, you do have to reboot, and it's going to apply the update while the system is in an unusable state. But I think Macs do a much better job at compressing their stuff than Windows does. Maybe even a better job than Linux does in a lot of cases. So you might end up with a smaller download.
Yeah, I don't know enough about Mac to actually say. So I couldn't really put in any information on there. I do know that the ultimate solution, for at least if let's say you're forced to use Windows, the ultimate solution is just to unplug your computer from the internet. Like, just don't connect to the internet at all, and only do so when, you know, you absolutely have to, because it's never going to try to update when there's no internet, because you actually have to have the internet in order to update. So that's your solution if you have things. And then while you're plugged into the internet, go through and hit that button to say don't do this for 7 days, or 3 days or whatever it is. And then as long as you're only connected during those 3 days, I mean, it sounds like asinine to actually have to think about that, right? But I mean, I know a lot of people who don't have internet at their house at all, and they just go to, you know, like the newest city or whatever in order to do their internet browsing and stuff again, and then they go back home. Like, that's still the case. I mean, and that's not just like in like the middle of Africa or something. That's like here in the United States. Like, there's there are places here in the U.S. that don't have good internet connection. It's only been within the last 5 years at this house that I've had good internet connection. You know, and even then I wouldn't qualify it as good. You know, you know, I would qualify it as expensive.
I would call.
Somebody tweeted out. I don't know who it was. It was one of my followers on Twitter. They were a part of a thread where everybody was naming their price and speeds for internet. I was shocked to see that a lot of people, like wherever Quinn from Snazzy Labs is, he has like Google Fiber. He gets a gigabit speeds both up and down for $70 a month.
Holy Christ, I wish.
Right? And one of my other followers, he said he had 100 megabits up and down for $12 a month. And I was like, I pay $105 a month just for internet. I get supposedly, this is what I pay for, 200 megabits down. And I don't ever get that, by the way. Never, not even close. I get around 100. And the stupid thing is the upload speeds has not changed since 2005. You know, when we had this installed, I still get 10 megabits up. Like, that's it. I'm surprised we can even do the podcast with those speeds these days, right? But yeah, that's literally what we get. I would like give my right hand for having symmetrical speeds, but it just doesn't happen. We live, literally, there are horses next door, okay? So we live in the country, all right? We're talking about this, you know? So the thing about internet is everywhere it seems to be a mess. And, you know, I know it's kind of off topic, but...
It's not really. I mean, we are talking about internet speeds.
And it just bothers me. I think it bothers everybody, but... What are we going to do about it? Because what can we do about it? Like, if you literally, if you're in a place, you literally have one choice for internet, whether it's, you know, Comcast or I have WoW, which, you know, whatever. I mean, the last thing I would say when I talk about the service and from this company would be WoW. You know, that's not an exclamation I would be using. So let's transition a little bit into old hardware, because when you brought up this topic, I kind of thought about older hardware, because I have an old ThinkPad, I have that computer behind me that they're all older, and I find it really interesting that Linux still does such a good job on older hardware, and I'm not just talking like LXQt or Linux Lite, or the puppy Linux, the distros that are meant for lower end hardware. Even on that ThinkPad, which has a 2011 processor in it, like it's a 10-year-old processor, I can still run like KDE Plasma on that system, and it runs fine. Like, and mm-hmm. like the most recent KDE Plasma, like Kubuntu or, you know, Arch or whatever. And that just continually, like, astonishes me. Like, it's so good. I mean, that's the reason why I use Linux.
Yeah, to me, I love the fact that we still, like, I personally talk with on Discord multiple people who are, like, using still to this day Intel Core 2 Duo systems, perfectly happy on Linux. Like, if it was Windows, could you imagine trying to use a Core 2 Duo on a Windows 11 or 10?
It would set itself on fire, I'm pretty sure. Like, that'd be a case of self-immolation. Yeah.
Windows would be like, you don't have a processor in here. There's just not one.
Yeah, it's... Like, I was talking to somebody who was using... I'm sure they said, like, a Pentium 4. Like that thing is 25 Ooh. Years old, and it wasn't like recent Linux. Like it was like it was an old version of like maybe Ubuntu or something, but it was still running fine. Like it was still perfectly fine. It was still capable of getting like it might have been running 14.04, so they were still getting freaking updates, like as of a couple years ago. So it's like, that's just insane. Like, it's so awesome. And this makes you kind of feel warm and fuzzy about Linux, because it's literally, I mean, I don't want to channel DT here because he made that saving the planet thing, but like, you're literally saving the planet a little bit if you use Linux on these older pieces of hardware. Plus, I mean, we almost have to use old hardware now because you can't buy new hardware anymore. Like, it's
without encountering too many issues. It's just not worth it. Come on. And also, now with prices being like 7 times what they're actually worth, why purchase anything?
All right. So, because I've been thinking that my computer has hardware problems, whether it does or not, I'm still hoping that it doesn't. But I went through and just for shits and giggles, built a system on System 76. I was like, you know what? If I'm going to buy a new computer, I'm going to support a small hardware vendor that, you know, supports Linux. And because I live in the United States and we don't have the plethora of awesomeness that is Linux hardware that the EU has, like Tuxedo and Slimbook and all this stuff, we don't have access to that. And importing it would just make it obscenely expensive. So I was like, I built one on System 76. I was like, the actual hardware, like the CPU and the case and all that stuff, it was fine. It came to like $1,800. I mean, it's still expensive compared to where we were like 2 years ago. But that was without a GPU. Like, you added a GPU to it, it tripled the price.
Holy crap.
Like they wanted like an, it was like a, the 6800, the Radeon 6800, the, like, I think it was like last year's AMD card. They wanted like $1,400 just for the card. And that's the AMD one. If you wanted like a 3080, like an NVIDIA card, it was like $4,000.
Oh my Christ.
Like I understand this is not System 76 fault because they're literally buying this stuff off the shelf. You know, so they have to pay that price because that's what they're charging. I was like, how is this not price gouging? Like, this has to be – there's no way the market has bared those prices. Like, that's not –
there probably will be some like legal action after all this calms down, because I mean, if you remember, all of the RAM manufacturers got together, hiked up prices of RAM and everything, then there was the massive court fallout from that, but that still lasted a while. Like, RAM was super expensive for like almost an entire year, so.
Yeah, and it's still just coming down. Like, now, I was looking the other day. Like, the thing is it is actually $50 cheaper. Like, I was looking because, again, every time I have a problem with Linux, somebody blames the cheap Chinese RAM that I have in my computer. So I was like, well, maybe I'll just buy some new stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was looking. Like, they have some Team Group stuff for, like, $280, and that's, like, $50 cheaper than it was before. So I decided I would wait a little bit and see if it came down a little bit more. But, yeah, so at least that has started coming down. I don't know. Prices are just stupid. Like, I don't I don't understand. It's like, I'm not an economics guy, but it seems like we could probably do something about this. I mean,
yeah, just a little something would be nice.
Like, I don't want to get into politics, but they said that the number of people going to Europe on vacation is like 2 times more than it was in 2019. Maybe if fewer people were going on vacation and more people were actually, you know, working. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have ships waiting at the docks that have our shit on them. Let's get that stuff off from there. Then you can go on vacation. All right. Like, I would go do that stuff, but I have a job, okay? like I'm already working here. Right? It's all right. Anyways, anything else to say on the internet thing before we move on, Tyler?
Nope. I think we're good.
All right, good. Moral of the story, use Linux in all situations. What kind of fucking question was that, Tyler? Use fucking Linux. I mean, that wasn't even a question. Of course you use Linux. I mean, come on. Anyways, let's move on. Every week, Tyler and I choose something. We use apps. We do picks. I call them apps. I call them picks. It doesn't matter what the hell the section is called. Usually it's apps. But so picks of the week. Tyler, what is your pick of the week?
Mine is TurboStat, which is a beautiful little command line program, which if you're familiar with like LM-sensors with a centers command, it essentially just is going to spit out a lot more information. You're going to get processor topology or topology, frequency, idle power state, statistics, temperature, power, all that good stuff. Like one of the things about it that I really like is you get the full breakdown between like TDI and all the other different, like, it gives you a very good readout of all of your system's informations. And if you were looking for something like you wanted to do some torture testing or just make sure that your system is thermally stable, TurboStat's a great program for that. And also if you're like me and you had something where that, you know, something weird going on with your temperatures at idle and you wanted to figure out why, TurboStat will help you do that within minutes. It's beautiful.
Is it just for the CPU or will it also do like GPU temperatures and stuff?
It depends. I'm pretty sure that it does support some GPUs and will give you some statistics on them. You shouldn't expect it if it does recognize your graphics card or anything extra like that and gives you readouts, like it did recognize, my AIO was in there. So it gave me a pump readout, but it didn't give me anything else. Like it didn't recognize the fans or anything like that. Further than your CPU and memory and stuff like that, if anything else works, that's just a nice little cherry on top. But for your main system specs, like your CPU, yeah, you're going to get a really good readout of info there.
Okay, I'll definitely give that a try. That's cool. I need to redo my temperature script for my bar, so I've always used LM sensors for that, but maybe I'll try this instead. All right, so my pick of the week is something called Time Trap. And basically what Time Trap is a time tracking application, CLI application, that allows you to keep track of time. It's literally all it does. It's very powerful, has a ton of different things. You can go through and keep track of different projects. You can keep track of different, you can have different sheets for like time tracking your, like clocking in, stuff like that if you do that stuff. This is really cool if you are like a freelancer or whatever and you have been taking freelance jobs where you have to keep track of your time work because you get paid by the hour. This can do that, and you can also have it saved so that you can then send it to the client if you need to, so that they can actually read it in a reasonable way of doing it, because it will output to certain formats and stuff like that, so it can be sent to other places, and it's really cool. So if you enjoy using things that are in the terminal and you don't want to deal with, because if you've done any freelancing at all, you know that the time tracking applications that usually come with things like Upwork or any of those like freelancing websites, those things are almost always utterly garbage. At one point, they no longer are, but at one point, they were all coded in Adobe Air. Like, ew, right?
What?
Right? Because that's how they did it, so they could be cross-platform, right? Because they needed that was before the days of Electron. That's probably what they're in now is Electron. What they needed to do was to be able to have an application that worked cross-platform that would take periodic screenshots so that they could you could show proof of work, so you could prove that you were going through and doing this. Now, Time Trap, as far as I know, won't take those screenshots. I haven't played around with it that much, but I don't think it will do that. But it will at least allow you to keep track of your time. So if that whether or not that's something you're doing for a client or something that you just do because you want to, you know, keep track of how much time you've been spending on a project or whatever, Time Trap is actually really cool, very powerful, and obviously in the terminal, so you get your nerd cred as well. So it's written in Ruby. So if you're gonna get into the code, you'd have to know some Ruby, but it is very good, and I've noticed that it's actually really, really fast. So it's not something that you have to worry about, taking too much resources in terms of time and stuff. So it's actually really good. And if you go through and do assign aliases to several of like the flags and stuff like that, you can go through and just have aliases so that you don't have to type out everything that you would normally have to type out if you're using the application. So aliases are actually really good for this application as well. So that's Time Trap. I don't know why In some places it's called Time Strap, and sometimes it's called Time Trap, but it is Time Trap. I wrote Time Strap, but it is Time Trap. Okay. Because typing is hard, as well as speaking. So, yeah. Yeah. So, coming up next week on the podcast, we're going to be talking about the best color schemes. So that should be a fun and entertaining thing. So what I think we'll do, Tyler, is we'll each come up with our top three color schemes, and that are like official someone else created color schemes, like whatever, and we'll talk about them. How in depth we'll get, I don't know. It's going to be the nerdiest episode you've ever come across, because I mean, who else is going to sit there and talk about color schemes for like half an hour? And that's definitely going to be fun. Anyway, so that's coming up then. The episode after that is our GitLab challenge. So I actually have to go through and actually do that now. So
same.
We have to. So that'll be the episode after that. So that is it on this episode. Before I go, I'd like to take a moment to thank current patrons: Devon, Chris, East Coast Web, Gen 2 is Fun 2, Patrick L, Marcus, Meglin, Sven, Jackson, Knife Tool, Steve A, Mitchell, Art Center, Merrick Camp, Joshua Lee, J Dog, and the BSDs Rock. And my patrons keep continuing to troll me with their names. The BSDs Rock and Gen 2 is Fun 2. Love you guys. Keep your names as they are, because I finally got this thing down so I can save them without having to you know, realize the Gen 2 is Fun 2. Gen 2 is Fun 2. Of course Gen 2 is Fun 2. Gen 2 is Fun 2 for other people. So, all right, but it's good. Anyways, so that is this for this time. We'll see you next week.